Kathleen Weflin is the editor-in-chief for 25 years of the Minnesota Conservation Volunteer magazine. That's from the Department of Natural Resources. And they are going to be celebrating their 75th anniversary next year. And we've asked Kathleen to come in and talk about that publication, which just about everybody I know gets a copy of. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Jay. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure. As I mentioned to you, I think I don't have all 75 years of the publication, but darn near. I checked my little corner in my library that has boxes of these things. I think a lot of people are the same way, but a lot of people do get the magazine, and it is supported by subscriptions, and those subscriptions help you distribute the publication to just a whole lot of different places. So mm-hmm. It's a bi-monthly publication, so let's talk about it, because there's been a lot, of course, over the years, a lot of great articles, great photographs, et cetera, from this area up on the North Shore. And we've had a number of writers and artists contribute to the publication. So kind of give me a brief overview, at least, of the 25 years you've been there.
Wow. It is a long time. And, you know, really, a lot of people do know about the magazine, but I'm happy to be on because I'm sure there are some listeners in your area who have actually not heard of it yet. So I'm encouraging them to go online and check us out at Minnesota Conservation Volunteer Magazine. It started in 1940, and we had a different name then, and you had mentioned that to me earlier, Jay. Mm-hmm. We were called the Conservation Volunteer because the department was the Department of Conservation.
Ah, right.
And everything was just getting started then, so there were 5,000 readers. And we now have more than 100,000 subscribers and an estimated readership close to 500,000.
Whoa.
Because people do save their magazines, they pass them on, and they share them with everyone.
Well, as I understand it, every public school and every library in the state also gets a copy.
That's right, they do. So we send out about 3,000 copies there to all the public schools and libraries. And we started a young naturalist feature so that we could reach those school children even more closely in the classroom, and we now have teachers' guides online. So
yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that. The young naturalist stories are geared, as I understand it, to about the sixth grade level, which is why I can read them. And but I think the thing that's interesting about that is that in other contexts, in speaking with people from both the Forest Service and the DNR, there's a good deal of concern about involvement of young people, particularly in this very tacky electronic walk around with something in your palm time that we are going through, particularly for young people. And the concern, of course, is that fewer young people are interacting with the outdoors. And the big fear for that is that if they don't, then pretty soon they're probably not going to appreciate nor understand the need for maintaining funding and outdoor programs all over the place. So I don't know that that's necessarily, you know, your mission with the Young Naturalist series, but it seems to me that it's a good way because it occupies a considerable portion of the magazine. There's quite a bit of information in there.
Yes, it does, and I agree with you. It is a concern, and I do think the magazine helps to address that. Years ago, Jack Judkins from Bemidji had called me and said that he wanted to start a teacher's guide to go with young naturalists, but then he went on to say that he was a language arts teacher and that he found that his students really reacted to the young naturalist because it was nonfiction. And it was about what was happening in their area in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it has a really strong appeal to young readers. And it also appeals to adult readers. It's amazing to me that we get people here right in the Department of Natural Resources who are science and experts will read something that's out of their field, and they really like it in Young Naturalist because it covers the whole subject.
Well, also, it's very graphic, lots of good illustrations, and which is,
right,
of course, given you an opportunity to bring in some pretty fine artists as well. I wanted to also ask you, mentioning as you did about other DNR staff people and their areas of expertise, one of the parts that I always read first is the letters to the editor and the questions that they have primarily about different things and the various the ways you've managed to infuse those answers with the very people that should be answering them within the DNR structure, no matter what it is, whether it's loons or bugs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And do you just, you know, roughly, do you get a lot of those inquiries? Is it hard to, you know, glean out the ones that might be of most interest, or how do you make that decision as to which of those questions you answer? Because you've only got a couple pages to do it in.
Right. Well, we do answer all the questions, even if they don't get published. So that helps. And we try to be seasonal, so it's something that people would be interested in if that applies. We get probably more questions about squirrels than anything else, so we try not to do too many squirrel questions.
Well, I got a few squirrel questions, but I won't bring them up now.
yeah, don't we all? So, yeah, it's a lot of fun to get those questions from readers and get the answers from the experts. So, and I know you've got experts in your area, too, and you had asked me earlier about people from your area, and Shell Anderson has been a great contributor, and mm-hmm. Paul Sundberg even contributing photos years back, Steve Wilson.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Minnesota Biologic Survey, working with people there. We did with Crystal on bees, which was pretty interesting.
And, yeah.
Lots of good information. We have a lot of people, of course, up here who are up here either all the time or seasonally because of where we are in the environment. And so it's only natural that we should be doing programming in that direction. And we do use a lot of naturalists from around the area. But it just seems to me that this is something that people are always interested in, if they're interested at all in being in this part of Minnesota. And I'm just wondering, does the conservation volunteer pretty much concentrate in Minnesota, or do you get people from out of the area that are interested in the publication and what's going on here in the state?
Mm-hmm. We do have readers outside of the state, and most of them tend to be Minnesotans who have moved. So, you know, we have maybe 100 people, I would say, outside of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And we do look at the state as a whole. We try to move around the state in the way we're covering stories, and we also try to cover all of the divisions within the DNR so that we're talking about lands and minerals as well as ecological issues, fish and wildlife, of course, and state parks and state forests. So all of those things get covered, both within a region like yours, where we might be talking about commercial fishing, like Superior, hiking on the Superior Trail. But then we try to also go off into the northwestern corner, down to the southwestern corner, and cover the state.
Well, and I noticed it's not, you know, the purpose of the publication is not necessarily to be news, but information. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like you're rushing around trying to cover, you know, flooding down in Blue Mounds and places like that, although
right.
you might pick up on it later. But mm-hmm. but it seems to me that the purpose of it is to acquaint people with all of the terrific, really, possibilities, both state and federal and private, you know, throughout the state, mm-hmm. places to go, places to visit. And so, I mean, you know, in any addition, there'll be anything from, like you say, talking about stocking sturgeon or something, you know, and then trails in central Minnesota, that kind of thing. So how do you make those decisions? I mean, you're the editor-in-chief. You've got an editorial board. You storm through this stuff on a regular basis, or
mm-hmm.
You got a big list.
Well, we do have a big list, and we depend on, you know, other people in the department to send us ideas and freelance writers to send us ideas, and we kind of pile those up, and then we all get together on the editorial staff here, sit around a table and look at our issues coming up and try to figure out what the balance is and what the things are that readers are going to want to hear about. We know in May, June that people want to hear about fishing.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, we're always going to be looking at that. And we've started, as you know, 8 years ago, a sense of place issue with November, December. It's kind of our holiday gift to the readers to do literary and photographic essays. So we know that those are places that we want to fill in.
Well, I also noticed that recently there have been a number of articles that involve women as hunters and fisher people.
Mm-hmm.
And what other trends, that didn't used to be the case, and what other trends do you see that would help involve people more in the out-of-doors and understand the issues and the value of out-of-doors? That certainly is one thing where women and young people are being involved. Do you got anything on the horizon that we should know about?
Yeah. Let me just comment on that, by the way. We did a story back in 1995 on women who hunt. And at that time, we got so many letters about it as if it were a really unusual thing. And now with this most recent issue doing the becoming an outdoors woman issue, mm-hmm. people have not responded in the same way at all. So it's like it's normal now for women to go out.
That's interesting.
And, yeah. So we see things like that surprise us, too. So in terms of current trends, I mean, people are very concerned about mining that's happening, about the preservation of lands. We have the legacy funding, and you know what is our legacy money doing?
Mm-hmm.
Climate change continues to be an issue, and we actually have a young naturalist story coming up on that. But a comment on that too that I'd like to make, Jay, is you know way back in 1960, previous editor John McCain had made a comment about climate change and the rising temperatures. So, you know, some of these issues have been around a while, but they resurface in bigger ways as time goes on, and we're more aware of them. So some of the time, we're just not aware of the history
mm-hmm.
that conservation issues have had.
Well, we're looking at 75 years next year. Got anything special planned?
We are going to do a recap of history in the opening issue in January, and then we're going to just take a look back with each issue and continue, as you put it so well earlier, to try to guide Minnesotans to the places in Minnesota that they might not have thought about, because there really still are lots of gems out there that we haven't covered in the magazine either. So our goal is kind of to surprise people with each issue.
Okay. Well, each issue, that means it's a bi-monthly publication, so every mm-hmm. month you get one. And the Conservation Volunteer is self-sustaining. It doesn't. You don't have a duck stamp to buy to get this. You subscribe to it, and it's been, well, it's been growing, and it looks better all the time. And I know very few people who don't or aren't acquainted with the publication, and that's, I think, thanks to you and your staff. We've been speaking with Kathleen Weflin. She is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Conservation Volunteer. Thanks for joining us, and have a good 75th anniversary.
Thank you very much, Jay.